you tuned to yesterday, featuring programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, bringing you an hour of horror. Later on, from Quiet Please from 1947. But first, Murder at Midnight with a tale of the 13th floor, a syndicated episode from August 30th, 1946.
Gonna cut you open and see if you've got a heart. See, I don't believe you have. And I just want to prove how a body can walk around without one.
Mickey, don't!
Midnight, the witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in The 13th Floor. Now, Murder at Midnight, tales of mystery and terror by radio's masters of the macabre. Our story by Winifred Wolf is The 13th Floor.
Hotel corridors scare me late at night. They're too long and too creepy. I'm always afraid the walls, like big, flat plaster hands, are going to close in on me. I wish somebody was around. Anybody might be Mickey. And his hands aren't made out of plastic, they're bone and they're blood. And they want to choke the breath out of me. I just better get down this corridor and close the door behind me. I'll lock it and hide under the covers till I turn on the radio and I hear that switch. It was pulled in a little room. And Mickey's dead, full of hot sparks and his big hands hanging like putty. Then I won't have to be afraid anymore. It's what happened tonight, just now. It's making the inside of me all curdled and sour and sick. Even if I live a million more days, I won't forget how I came into that lobby. Just like always. I walked over to the desk. Hi, Joe. What's a good word?
Here. Got a rent statement from the hotel. No letters.
Oh. Still is hot out, isn't it? Sort of muggy and sticky. Think it's gonna rain?
Maybe.
You don't like me very much, do you?
No, not very much. You'll excuse me, I'm quite busy, Miss
Owen. Hey, you're a fresh little punk. I ought to tell the manager. It's a fine way to treat guests who pay their bills. Don't I always pay my rent on time?
Sure. Why not? $5,000 lasts a while if you take care of it.
Why, you... Hey, wait a second. Hold that elevator.
Sweet dreams, Miss Owen.
I said hold the elevator a second. What's the idea almost slamming it in my face?
Sorry, Miss Owen.
Yeah, I bet you are. Oh, Mr. Talbot. Evening.
Good evening.
Sure is hot out, wouldn't you say? I was saying to Joe, muggy and sticky.
Yeah.
I just did an awful good movie at the Franklin. Tomorrow night they're having Lana Turner. You like Lana Turner?
Very much.
Yeah, me too. A lot of women don't because they're jealous of the way she looks. Me, though, I got blonde hair myself. I was planning to see her tomorrow night. Do you plan to...
Sorry, Miss Owen. I have an appointment tomorrow evening.
You run the elevator, you fresh punk. What you're hired for.
Oh, by the way.
Me?
No, Tommy.
Oh, yes, sir.
Will you let me in with your pass key? I forgot mine.
Yeah, sure thing, Mr. Talbot.
Car stopped and I got out. I was glad to get out.
Your floor.
Yeah, thanks for nothing. That's when it began, right there. The light from the elevator looked like a lot of lemonade, only being poured the wrong way, up instead of down. Hey, I remember thinking that. Funny to remember it now. I looked at my watch. It was 2 minutes to midnight. I started down the hall. I'm feeling something's wrong. Don't be to get the jitters for nothing. Everything looked the same. Nothing was any different. My room was at the end of the hall. I took my key out and I shoved it in the lock. Didn't open. I kept twisting it and pushing it. Yeah, stick with my knee. Then, all of a sudden, I looked up and realized what was wrong. The number on the door was 1307, not 1407. I was on the wrong floor, that was it. That rotten little kid, I'll fix him. I was ready to bet he'd done it on purpose. Then...
Give Nicky a kiss, baby. Aren't you glad to see me?
Nicky.
Come on in. I've been waiting for you a long time. I said come in. I'm getting a draft.
Nicky, let go of my arm. You're hurting me.
Sorry, baby. Maybe I don't know my own strength, huh?
What do you want? How'd you get in here?
One thing at a time. Don't rush me.
What'd you lock the door for?
I don't like interruptions. You never used to either when you were alone with me. Remember, Kitty?
I don't remember nothing.
Yeah, I know. You got a memory like a faucet. You turn it off and on, wonderful. Take me, for instance. I have the kind of a memory you can't turn off. It keeps running all the time. The longer it runs, the hotter it gets. So hot now, Kitty, it'll scald you.
Look, Nicky.
I am looking. You're still a nice-looking number, you know? I always did like the way your waist curves in, how white your neck is.
You didn't come here to tell me how I look.
The way you toss your hair over your shoulder like it gets in your way. Go ahead, Kitty. Toss your hair back for Nicky.
What are you trying to do, dangle me on a string?
Yeah, you're still a good-looking number. I don't look so hot, though, do I? You think maybe I lost a little weight?
Look, Nicky, please.
My face looks kind of pasty. That's because you don't get much chance for fresh air, sweating what's left of time away in a death cell.
If I scream, the police will come and get you. If you come near me, I'll scream.
You won't scream.
No, come one step closer now, shall
you? You won't scream because there's not that much sound left in you. It's all frozen and sticking in your throat like an ice cube. Because you're afraid. You're afraid of me. Try screaming, Kitty. You see? What'd I tell you?
Nicky, I can help you. I can hide you here so they won't find you. Then I can help you get away, Nicky. Anywhere you want, I promise.
I asked you before to kiss me. You still haven't, you know?
No, don't come near me, please.
You used to like it. You never used to wait for me to ask you.
Nicky, don't. No.
Sometimes you used to come over to me without me asking. Well, what's the matter? Do I look as bad as all that? Oh, you afraid I'll get your pretty dress dirty?
But you gotta give me a chance. I can explain.
I know I'm not clean. You know, I crawled for a half a mile in the mud until I couldn't hear the dogs chasing me anymore. If I'd known you were gonna act like this, I would have said...
You gotta give me a break.
I would have said, Warden, call me a taxi. A nice, clean taxi so I can go see my girl, Kitty Owen. A cheap little squealer sold me down a river for 5 G's. 5,000 lousy
bucks. Give me a little. Take your hands off me.
Oh, I like to hold your face like this. Such a little face. Such big eyes. Big green eyes like a small tiger. Kitty, kitty. Like a cat. Sly, sneaky cat with long blonde hair. Don't you remember how I used to kiss you on the
fish?
Oh, fish.
Nicky.
You act like you do remember.
You remember, too, don't you? You remember how it used to be with us, Nicky? Feel my hair the way it used to. Go on, you like to do it. You said it was soft like silk. Feel my hair, Nicky. You're not mad at me, are you? I said I was sorry. I went crazy. I didn't know what I was doing. I'll help you now, Nicky. Come on, run your fingers through my hair, Nicky.
You old lousy little tramp. don't make me laugh. You crying, huh? Cat, crying crocodile tears. Are you crying because you're sorry for me?
You sorry because sooner or later the cops will catch up with me and drag me back and I'll burn to a crisp in a chair, huh? Or you're crying because you know what I'm going to do to you.
Remember how it used to be with us, Nicky?
I know when I broke out they'd find me, but I wanted to say goodbye to you first. I wanted to kiss you. See if it still did the same things to me. I'll tell you something, Kitty. You leave me cold.
That knife. What are you going to do with that knife?
I'm going to cut you open and see if you've got a heart. I don't believe you have. I just want to prove how come a body can walk around without a heart.
No.
Just arms and legs stuck together with nothing to make them run.
I'll get you for this, Duff.
What are they going to do? Electrocute me first, then take me out and hang me? What's the difference?
I'll tell you, Nicky, how it was. Just let me tell you. After you held up that jewelry store and the old dame was killed, when they put up the $5,000, I went crazy.
Yeah?
Honest, Nicky, I must have been clear out of my head. I've been sorry ever since, but I figured the cops would get you for it anyway. And then I'd be left with nothing. I didn't have a cent.
So you didn't wait. You turned me in yourself.
But I didn't know what I was doing.
I know what I'm doing. I'm going to kill you, Kitty Owen.
It won't help any.
It'll help me.
Stay away from me.
The only prayer is Sam. It should be good for a laugh.
No, no, please.
Kitty, 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 like a cat.
No!
Yes, kitty, yes. I'm going to kill you. I'm gonna...
I got him. Following me slow like that, he didn't notice when I backed up to the table, picked up the vase. And after I hit him, he didn't know it then either. Just went down looking surprised. I knew he wouldn't be out long. So I bent over and took the key out of his pocket. He moved and made a funny little noise through his lips. And I stopped breathing altogether. I had the key. I was free. The hall was empty, no one around. I started to run down the narrow little corridor of the 13th floor. I pressed the elevator button and I waited. Help, that was the only way I could get it. It seemed like hours instead of seconds. Finally, I heard it coming. I felt like I was standing on hot coals. My insides wouldn't stand still. The hand of the clock above the elevator climbed slowly from 5 to 6 and to 7. I was going crazy to stand up in there. And 7, 8, 10, 11, 12. And my heart exploded. My legs were soft, sticky pieces of dough, hardly able to hold my body up. The elevator had stopped at 12, and then went on to 14. 14! Then I remembered it wasn't going to stop. It couldn't stop. Because in this building, there wasn't any 13th floor.
A man from the death house. And the girl who betrayed him, playing cat and mouse on a floor that doesn't exist. The hand of the elevator indicator did not stop at 13. But the hand of the watch on Kitty's wrist had stopped at 12. All ready for...
murder! At midnight! Now, back to Murder at Midnight and the 13th floor.
13th floor? Yeah, that's where I was, a floor that didn't exist, so how could I get out? How could I get away? What was I going to do? I didn't understand. I didn't understand anything.
Pretty good little slugger, baby.
Nick.
You took so much trouble to unlock the door, you should have taken a little time to lock it again after you.
Don't come after me with that knife, please, don't. I don't want to die.
You think I did?
Why don't you give me another chance?
What chance did you give me?
Ow!
Well, I didn't think you had that in you. Well, why doesn't somebody come, huh? Maybe it's because there isn't anybody besides us. Cozy, huh? Try it again. Go ahead. Try on again. Maybe you'll have better luck.
He was leaning against the door halfway down the hall, just leaning there and watching me because he knew he had me cornered. I wasn't cornered. I turned and I ran the other way around the corner and down another hall. I didn't know if I really heard him running after me But it was just the pounding in my head making a noise. I got to the end of the hall. Then I stopped out of breath and looked behind. He wasn't there. No sign of him. I sucked in my breath so even that didn't make any sound. And I listened. I listened to nothing at all because it was so quiet. It was so awful quiet, I could hear it. The wall I leaned against was big and flat and gray, and the corners jutted out into the hall like dead fingers. I looked to the right side of me, down the corridor. Like he wasn't there. So I turned my head. I looked up the hall, almost hoping in a way I'd see him and get it over with instead of this wait. I wasn't there either. I tried to squeeze myself, my shoulder blades, into the wall so I could hide. But it was hard and cold. It wouldn't move. Becky! Becky! Becky, where are you? For the love of heaven, say something so I'll know where you are. Don't just keep standing here. I can't take it. Becky! I'm sick. My stomach's sick. Oh, my. Just make some noise. Nikki, where are you? I found myself back at the elevator again. I knew he was around somewhere. Around one of those corners that were jutting out like dead fingers. Wait. The elevator was coming up again. My hand was up to 11. Had to stop. I pressed the button, threw all my weight against it. And it did. It did. The big door was sliding open, and I was safe.
Going up or down, Kitty Owen. I'll take you wherever you want to go.
Oh, not again. I can't stand.
I'll take you for a ride.
No, I won't go.
Well, didn't you ring me? I heard you ring. Come on. Get in. Just the two of us. We'll go for a ride. Only just one of us will come back. I said, get in.
All the time he was talking, I was backing away, And then all of a sudden, I saw a door with a bright red sign that said, Stairway Down. My last chance, I almost leaped to it. I opened the door and I flew down the stairs. It wasn't easy with high heels, but even so, the sound of it was like music. Sweet, hot music from a clarinet, because I knew they were taking me down. Faster, faster. I fell a couple of times. I caught myself by clinging to the banister. It was still there. So I kept running. Suddenly, there I was. I was out on the street again. Now I was really safe. There were always a lot of people on the street. I didn't see any people, just a big policeman with a red face. Boy, he sure looked good to me. Hey, wait a minute.
Now, take it easy, miss. Don't get excited.
Hey, look, Nicky Carstairs, he's in that hotel. He's after me.
Carstairs?
Yeah.
Sure, I know you're wanting the kids. It can't be.
Look, he's out, I tell you. Saw him, he wants to kill me.
But Nicky Carstairs is in the death cell. Don't you read the papers?
Say, I'll have you reported. What kind of a cop are you anyway?
What kind of a woman are you without a heart? Just arms and legs stuck together with nothing to make them go.
You're not a policeman. You're Nicky. You're still Nicky. You didn't look like Nicky a second ago. I don't understand. I don't understand.
What's the get up? How do I look?
Nicky, please, no, not anymore.
I told you we were playing cops and robbers, and this time I'm the cop. And I'm still gonna kill you, Kitty Owen.
It wasn't over yet. I had to run again. My last stronghold. My last hope, the hotel lobby. If there was no one there, I'd just give up. I was through. As I ran around the corner, I thought the war had ended all over again because there was confetti coming out of all the windows, so much of it fallen. The sidewalks were beginning to look like it had been snowing for a long time. I ran over them like a carpet. I ran with my eyes down and I could see the headlines. Nicky Carstairs in death house prison. No one had to tell me this. I ran into the lobby to find people, to tell them where he was. There was no one there either. Only Joe at the desk. Joe?
Come early the night, Miss Owen. Not quite midnight.
Look, Joe, I know you don't like me, but you gotta help me.
Reading the papers about Nikki Carstairs breaking out?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to...
$5,000 should last you a little while if you take care of it.
Hey, Joe, he's here. He's in the hotel. He's chasing me.
That's a lot of money. $5,000.
What's to kill me? You gotta help me.
Sweet dreams, Miss Owen.
He's here. Can't you understand? He's on the 13th floor.
There's no 13th floor in this building.
He's there. I tell you,
sweet dreams, Miss Owen.
I know there wasn't any use arguing, and he wouldn't believe me. Even if he did, he wouldn't help me because he didn't like me.
Going up.
No one would believe me. There was only one thing left for me to do, lock myself in my room on the 14th floor, stay there until they caught Nikki. I leaned against the back of the car, crouched in a corner. My eyes closed because I was so tired. I was so tired. I kept thinking of a bed, a big white bed, three white sheets to crawl between, and a door that was locked.
Sorry to have to bother you about that passkey, Tommy. I just forgot to pick mine up at the desk.
It's like a glass of cold water that had been thrown on top of me. I opened my eyes. That Talbot guy was in the car again. No! Not again, still. And he was talking about the passkey the way he had before. Not before either. Because when I looked at my watch, it was still minute midnight. Then I suddenly knew. I was so weak with relief I wanted to cry. Yeah, I heard him say it. Sometimes you can see your whole life pass by in just a second. That lifetime I lived in the elevator, all in my head. Was sandwiched in between a couple of floors. It never really happened. It was just that I had been dreading it for months, coming back some night, finding Nikki there waiting for me. My mind had invented a 13th floor, when it never was there at all. And the cop and the newspapers that said Nikki was out. All a part of it. That crazy half dream. Of course he wasn't out. I told myself it was all part of it. I never got out of the elevator. I was there all the time. All the time.
Your floor, Miss Owen.
14?
Sure, 14. Ain't that your floor?
You're sure this time, aren't you?
What are you talking about this time?
I mean, never mind. 1401. That was on the first door. I was on the right floor this time. I was... I'm feeling better already. What a fool I'd been. Started to walk down the hall. And I feel a Talbot and the boy in the elevator was watching me. Wish they shut the door and go on.
Say, Mr. Talbot.
Yes?
Did you read about Nikki Carstairs?
No, what?
He escaped. Got out of the death house.
Is that so?
He's on the loose. Good night, Miss Owen.
Yeah. Hotel corridors scare me. They're too long and too creepy. I'm always afraid the walls, like big flat plaster hands, are gonna close in. Now I know it was more than just dreading it for weeks. Made me imagine. Nikki was out and after me. Must have known it all along. Had a feeling I wasn't safe. I'm going to go to my own room. I'll lock the door and hide under the covers till I hear they found him. Took him back. Till I hear he's dead, I won't have to be afraid anymore. Not anymore.
Give Nikki a kiss, baby. Oh. Aren't you glad to see me?
The 14th floor this time, a floor that does exist, But the hands of the watch on Kitty's wrist still stand at 12 for...
Murder at Kitty was played by Ann Shepherd, and Paul Mann was Nicky. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leder.
At Midnight on Tune to Yesterday from the 30th of August, 1946, a syndicated episode. And that same story was later used in a TV episode of Suspense, based on the radio show, in May of 1949. During that broadcast, a very scary time for live television. At one point, one of the sets almost started to fall down as the woman was trying to escape. This is an hour of horror on Tune to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for an episode of Quiet Please with the story Camera Obscura from the Mutual Broadcasting System from October 13th, 1947.
Quiet Please. Quiet Please. System presents Quiet Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and features Ernest Chappell. Quiet Please for tonight is called Camera Obscura. I don't suppose you ever killed anybody, did you? I didn't think you had. Funny, though, you can't tell, you know. Murderers very seldom look like murderers, and there's lots more of them around. You have any idea? I know a fella, a little squinched up, wheezing gizmo. He's a carpenter, lives on Berenda Street down in L.A. Murdered his wife's brother in 1928, and nobody ever had the faintest idea, except the wife's brother. And the guy's doing fine. He thinks he's got away with it. Well, he'll find out. Like that woman in Alameda that killed her husband with that stuff you can buy at any drugstore and never have a clerk raise an eyebrow at you? No, there's no such thing as getting away with murder, friend. Believe me. And for my money, walking up the 13 steps and standing on a trap door with 9 turns of a hangman's knot rubbing against your left ear, or sitting in a chair smelling burnt almonds with a lot of scared faces staring at you through a little window, or even the hot squad itself. Believe me, any of those legit ways of paying off for murder is pie compared to what you're going to get if you let it ride. You're sure you never killed anybody, huh? You better be. I know. Believe me, I know. I killed Philip D. Vandervoort on September 29th, 1928. I was never arrested. I was never suspected. But, no, I'm not going to tell you how I killed him. I'm not running a school for murderers. And anyway, if you're planning on murdering somebody, you got your own ideas on how you want to do it. The only thing is, I bet you a quarter when you get done listening to me, you'll change your mind. You see, The man said he was going to call my story Camera Obscura. I suppose maybe that puzzles you a little bit. Not everybody knows what a camera obscura is, but practically everybody here in Santa Monica knows. Biggest camera obscura in the world's right here, down at the foot of Santa Monica Boulevard in the little park that runs along the top of the Palisades. It's a little green building, probably 20 feet high, practically circular, maybe 20 feet in diameter. And up on the top, in a little kind of cupola, is a lens, like a camera lens, only bigger. And some kind of mirror arrangement in there with it, and there's a big round table that almost fills the building, white top on it. And the image the lens picks up is reflected down under the table, so it's like a Technicolor movie of whatever's going on outside. There's a wheel, like a ship's steering wheel that you turn to turn the lens with it, turn it around so you can point it out towards the bay or up the street or anywhere. That's a cute little gizmo. Tourists have been getting a kick out of it for I don't know how many years. Ask anybody that's ever been in Santa Monica. Everybody's seen it, and an awful lot of people have been in it. And that's the Camera Obscura, a harmless little green building in a park in the sunshine, and black as a murderer's heart inside. And a miniature world lying flat on that table in there. Go see it sometime. You'll get a bang out of it, too. Even if you don't see what I saw. There was this girl that worked in Llewellyn's restaurant next door to Harry Cowan's bargain store where I worked. Now I've forgotten her name, Kate or Mary or Joanne or something, just to show you. That morning I went next door for a cup of what Llewellyn claims is coffee. Nobody in there but this girl, this waitress, Mary or Kate or whatever her name was. She'd been crying. I said, "What's the matter with you, kid?"
"Nothing."
"Give me a cup of coffee." "What's the matter, kid?"
"Oh, nothing. Sigh. You've seen Phil Vandervoort the last couple of days."
I looked up at her, and the tears started out of her eyes again, and I said, and I was telling the truth. I said, "Not since night before last." "Why?" I said.
"Where'd you see him?"
"Why, down to the PE station down the street." "What's the matter? Did he run out on you?" "What do you mean? Did he?"
"He's gone."
"You sure?"
"I knew it when I gave him the money. I knew it.
"What did you do? Did you give him money?"
"Oh, sorry, don't tell anybody, will you? Please don't."
"Well, I won't, but..."
"He said he needed $200 to pay a man for something, and the banks were closed, and he couldn't get any money, and he needed it so bad."
"You mean you gave him $200?
I borrowed it from Llewellyn. I told him I'd give it back to him in the morning. I had $240 I'd saved up, and... Oh, Si, what am I going to do?"
Wait a minute, I said. So this was where the money came from. Well, wait a minute, I said. You mean you borrowed $200 from Llewellyn to give to Phil, and now he's gone and you got to dig it yourself?"
Saved, Si, and now I..."
"Well, ain't that fine. Ain't that fine. How come you did it? Couldn't he have bartered from somebody else, for God's sakes?"
"He... We was going to get married, Si."
"Well, you sap. $200, you sap."
I know it. But what am I going to do?"
"I guess pay up. You said anything to the police?"
"Oh, no."
"Going to?"
"Well, I don't know. Should I?" "No, I can't."
"Why not?"
"Well, I don't know if he really ran out on me, but..."
"You were going to marry him, huh?"
"He asked me to."
"Yeah. Well..."
"Oh, Si, don't say anything about it to anybody, will you?"
"No, I won't
Please.
Say anything. I won't say anything.
If he's really gone..."
"He's gone, all right."
"What should I do?"
"Well, you can go to the cops if you want to, but if I was you, you'd get an awful lot of publicity, you know. That worth $200 to you?"
"I know it. I don't know what to do.
Well, I gotta beat it. Harry will be screaming for me. Here, you got change for a $10 bill?
Yeah, I guess so. $10, $50, $2, $3, $4, $5, $5, $10.
See what I mean? She didn't have the faintest idea that that was one of the $10 bills she gave to Phil Vandervoort a couple of nights ago. Isn't it amazing? I should have thought she'd notice how wrinkled and damp the bill was from the salt water. You see, I didn't think about going through his pockets till after I took him out there under Santa Monica Pier and fastened him to one of the pilings down deep. It was a good place, I thought. Nobody ever goes out there. Nobody but the barracuda and the flat, ugly stingrays with those rows of teeth like white needles. Kind of left the camera obscura sitting out there on the Palisades all by itself, didn't we? Yeah, we'll get back there. I'll say we will. It was funny about Phil Vandervoort. He was one of those fellas you see around town, you never get to know him. But you see him, and he's like a bus stop sign or one of the kids that sells the Outlook in the Express on the corner across the street from the California Bank. You know, he's there, and you never notice him. Never notice him when he disappears, either. It's like that in California quite a lot. So Philip D. Vandervoort sort of faded out. And practically the only people in Santa Monica that thought about him was me and the babe in the Wellens restaurant. And she didn't know I thought about him at all. Funny how a fella is. She never brought up the subject to Phil. I was the one that talked about him. And she... Well, I guess she had been in love with him. There's something about being in a setup like this, a game, kind of playing it right up to the edge, saying things that'd give you away if she'd had the slightest inkling. Had a great kick. Yeah. A great kick. I remember one afternoon, I had Wednesday afternoons off, and that day I stopped in the restaurant and she was putting on her hat. Llewellyn had told her her business was slack that day and she could have the half day. So instead of eating a piece of pie, I said, come on, let's take a walk. Thought maybe we'd go down to the beach and take one of the trams over to Ocean Park and play tango, eat a couple of hot dogs. So we started down Broadway and I said, hey, you ever been in that camera obscura over there?
No, have you?
No, let's go see what it is.
Okay.
It was one of those afternoons when the sun was still shining bright. There was a big bank of fog sitting offshore a few miles, sort of sneaking in to take over. Those afternoon fogs in Santa Monica are a thing. They slide in, and all of a sudden, it's like a great, big, damp, gray seagull sitting down on top of you. So I figured the fog would be in another hour, and the beachfront is pretty dreary when that happens, so maybe we'd kill a little time in this gizmo and then walk on over to the Criterion and see the Rough Riders. That was what was playing then, the Rough Riders. There isn't anybody around the camera obscura when we climb up the steps. No tourists, nobody, just the girl and me, whatever her name was. The wooden door bangs behind us. I didn't know a place could be so dark. Well, we stood there and looked at the white top table and the moving picture of Santa Monica on it. I have to admit, it's quite a kick the first time you see it. But I hadn't seen anything yet. I twisted the wheel around and the picture slid across the tabletop, and there were the breakers rolling in. There was the Monica Ballroom and the merry-go-round and the pier, and people fishing and people walking around, and I thought about what was under that pier, if it was still there. And then a man walked by real close, so he almost filled the whole picture. He turned and he seemed to look right at us, up off that tabletop.
Look, there's Phil!
And there he was, staring right at me and kind of smiling, and right behind him in the picture was the pier I left him under. And he stood there, and she fumbled at the door and threw it open, and the light fluttered over the picture, and he was gone. Yes, and when I went outside, he was gone from there, too.
But we saw him, Si. We both saw him.
I don't know. I couldn't tell her it was impossible for Phil Vandervoort to stand outside the camera obscura that afternoon, could I? I had to go along with her. I had to say, sure, you'll see him again. Sure, you'll get your $200 back. Sure, he'll show up again. Every time I said it, I got that chilly, cold seaweed feeling between my shoulder blades. I should have had sense then and gone up to Clarence Webb's office and turned myself in and said, Clarence, I murdered Phil Vandivert, and you'll find him tied to a piling under the pier out there just the other side of the dance hall. I should have done that. All they'd have done to me was send me up to Folsom and put the black cap on me. But no, I had to do it the hard way. I had to get away with murder. I had the hunch, and I didn't play it. I wish I had, that's all.
Let's go over to the camera obscura again, Si.
I didn't want to go to the camera obscura again. I didn't want to go in there in the dark. I didn't want to see that picture. I didn't want to see Phil Vandivert. This afternoon, the fog was already coming in. You couldn't see the end of the pier. And as you looked out toward the bay, that white wall kept easing in closer and closer. And I had the feeling that when it got to me, I'd disappear too. Right in broad daylight, you get that feeling. It was warm in there in the camera obscura from the sunshine that had been beating down on it all that morning.
Look at the fog, Si. Look, Si.
And the fog in the picture swirled aside a little. There was somebody coming toward us. I had the illusion that he was actually coming toward us right out of the picture. And then the fog blew away a little more from his face.
It's Phil. Look, Si, it's Phil. I knew we'd see him again. Phil!
And she ran out of the place and the door slammed shut. I was all alone in there. She ran down the steps and I could see her in the picture, and Phil came walking steadily toward me, and then I could see her in the picture. She ran toward him outside there, and I could hear her calling outside. Then she ran toward him in the picture, and I could see them both just as plain as I see you. And she ran straight through him as if he was part of the fog himself, and he kept on coming closer toward me. Closer and closer. I don't know how I got out of there. I honestly don't know. I remember I couldn't find the door in the dark, and when I finally did get out, my hands were all full of splinters from pounding on the walls, and there was a gash over my eye where I fell down the stairs, and I've never been so scared in my life. I mean to say, I had never been so scared in my life. You see, something tripped me as I opened the door. Something caught my ankle and threw me. No, it wasn't Phil Vandivert's hand, as you're probably thinking. It was a long strand of wet seaweed. The kind that gets all tangled around the pilings under the pier.
Let's go over to the camera obscura.
I said I'll never go to that place again. I will never go to that place again.
I'm going anyway. If you don't want to go, I'm going.
I said don't go. Don't go. It's foolish to go to that place.
There's some reason why Phil's hanging around that place, and I want to go there.
I thought, I know why. I know why he's hanging around there.
No, I won't go to the movies with you. Going over to the camera obscura, whether you want to go or not.
And I knew I had to go. I said to myself, if you let that girl go over there by herself, she'll see him again, and what'll she find out? I said to myself, you got to go with her so you can keep her from finding out whatever she might find out. And I said, well, all right, I'll go just this one time. There wasn't any fog this time. It was a beautiful, bright day. There was just the two of us. Or I should say the three of us. Yeah, we saw him again. This time was the payoff as far as she was concerned. Oh, I'll tell you about it. There wasn't anything wrong with the picture as long as we had the lens aimed toward town. She turned the wheel slowly and the picture flowed past on the table. Up northward toward the Miramar Hotel, down Ocean Boulevard with the palm trees in front of the little real estate offices. And then we were looking up Broadway, and I could see Harry Cowan walk out of the store and into Llewellyn's. Then the gas station came into view, and we looked down Ocean Boulevard the other way, and then the rustic fence at the edge of the Palisades, and the spires of the dance hall on the pier swam across the board. And there was Phil leaning against a palm tree not 20 feet away, it seemed.
There he is.
And just as if he'd heard her, he looked up at us and grinned. He lifted his hand and beckoned. Again, I had that curious feeling that he was real. He was three-dimensional there in the picture. And she opened the door and went out. But but she came right back in.
Sorry, there's nobody there.
I could have told her I knew it.
There's nobody out there.
But there he was on the table, grinning at us. And he said something. I could see his lips move.
What did he say?
I didn't hear anything.
I'm going to look again.
She opened the door. And Phil's lips moved again. And I could read his lips. Anybody could read that word. Try it sometime. He said, "Murderer."
Sorry. I'm scared. There isn't anybody there.
And the little figure in the picture smiled again. And he raised his hand and pointed straight at me, and I could see his lips move again. And I knew she had read his lips, too. He said it again. "Murderer."
Stop that.
Why, we can't see him out there. He's haunting you. You killed him. You... Help!
What else could I do? She knew. She'd tell. And I'd hang. So... And I can't even remember her name. There's quite a bit of space under the table in there. And it's dark, like I said. After a little while, I opened the door and looked out very casually. Everything seemed to be normal. I saw Bobby Clark, the motor cop, go by on his bike. Harry Cowan was walking back into the store. Nobody was looking at me. I was about to start down the stairs when a sudden thought struck me. I hadn't looked at the tabletop of the picture. I closed the door and turned around. Phil was still there in the picture, still looking at me. And there, beside him under the palm tree, was the girl. Not much left of the story now. Oh, I should have gone then and confessed. It would have been easier. Knew nobody'd ever find Phil. And I didn't want anybody to find her. They locked the place up at night, but the door came open easy. I didn't bring any light. It was 3 o'clock in the morning, and the fog was hanging from the sky like a wet velvet curtain. You couldn't see a streetlight a block away. I went in. I fumbled around under the table where I'd left her. She wasn't there. I found a paper of matches, finally. She wasn't there. You think you know what terror is? Well, don't let me tell you. I stood up at last, and the night was so still I could hear the foghorn from way up toward Point Doom. The fog, as I told you, was thickest. Well, I glanced at the table. There they were, the two of them. And there wasn't any fog in the picture. I couldn't mistake them. Phil and the girl. And together they raised their hands and they beckoned to me. I knew I couldn't move. But I opened the door. I went down the steps into the fog. There was just one tiny spark of hope in the back of my mind. Just one tiny spark. I knew they wouldn't be there. But they were. And they turned and started away. And I followed them through the fog. Down past the suburban station. Down the hill to the pier. Down across the boardwalk. Down across the clinging, sticky, wet sand and the fog running its fingers through my hair. And under the pier, with the wet, spongy piling making hell zone high forest around me. The smell of dead things cast up from the sea and the waves reaching for me. They went on, and I followed. And the waves beat at my knees. And the undertow clutched at my waist. And I followed. And then I felt my breath being snatched from me. There was a long horror of seaweed across my face. And darkness, and the taste of salt. listened to Quiet Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper. The man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell. And the girl was played by Charita Bauer. As usual, the music for Quiet Please is composed and played by Gene Perazzo. And now for a word about next week's Quiet Please, here is our writer-director, Willis Cooper.
The music of Claude Debussy was the inspiration for next week's story, which, borrowing the composer's title, I have called La Fille aux Cheveux de Laine, The Girl with the Flaxen Hair. If you like charming ghosts, you'll probably like her.
And so, until next week at this same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell. Quiet Please comes to you from New York. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Quiet Please, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 13th of October, 1947, on the Mutual Broadcasting System, which brings the curtain down on this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levoner. It's been a pleasure.